Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Week's episode of Irate Tireless Minority, Hiding Our Heads in the Sand. Today we're going to talk about politics, religion, and doing what's right. For politics, we have water rights. Yes. It's an article in northernegg.net. Federal court rules plowing without an Army Corps permit violates Clean Water Act. Because in case you weren't aware, they updated the definition of waters of the U.S. And if you just do a Google search on waters of the U.S. and then go to the EPA thing, it will lead you down a rabbit hole of legalese and nonsense. But you may get to Clean Water Rule definition of waters of the United States, and it's, see if I can get that to come up here, 40 CFR 230.3, in which it says that the waters of the United States are basically everything, including puddles, and then it says, no, it's not puddles, and, you know, it goes through a huge, long list of gobbledygook. The sort that bureaucrats use to say, we think we know everything about everything and we should be able to tell you everything about everything, to which I reply with Ben Franklin's quote, were we told when to sow and reap from Washington, we would soon be without bread. In any case, this is talking about the case of John Duarte, with Duarte Nursery, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, who's been fighting the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers, who declared him in violation of the Clean Water Act for farming without a wetlands permit. There was a disappointing decision in Duarte Nursery versus Army Corps of Engineers. The court ruled that the company violated the Clean Water Act by plowing its property, even though the act exempts normal farming practices. And the implementing regulations state that plowing is never even subject to the Act, so long as it does not convert wetlands to dry land. Since no wetlands were lost or reduced in acreage by plowing in this case, the court's decision amounts to a rule that you may not plow in federally regulated wetlands, which, look up the definition, can be just about anything, without an Army Corps permit, the clear exemptions to the contrary notwithstanding. The court also reversed an earlier ruling in the case and held that although the Corps ordered Duarte Nursery to halt all activity in any area of its property that could be considered waters of the U.S. on its property, the company did not suffer any deprivation of its property. On this basis, the court then ruled that Duarte Nursery's due process rights have not been violated by being ordered not to farm its property for the last 3 years. Do you get that? Because the waters of the U.S. definition means that any water on your land, basically, from what I'm reading, even though later on it says not this water or that water, doesn't include puddles, unless, of course, those puddles qualify as prairie potholes or these other things or whatever. And it doesn't include ditches unless those ditches drain in a certain way into a certain place, or unless you're part of a floodlands plain as designated by the United States government, because then those puddles become waters of the U.S., and even though it's on your property, you can't plow it. Hello, farmers. Are you listening? So, once again, the ever-encroaching meddling of a Washington bureaucracy, unelected bureaucrats making regulations to micromanage everything about the U.S., which is not how our governmental form is supposed to work, by the way. That's what state governments are for. That's what local control is for. It's not supposed to be coming out of Washington to say, oh, this is under federal regulation, so you can do nothing with it. No. The federal government, no, that's not their place. And the EPA, nobody elected these people. It has become to the ridiculousness, and I know I've reported before on the fact that farm dust was being considered to be a pollutant by the EPA, which should make it regulated by the EPA. So don't drive down your dirt road in your pickup truck, because then you'll be making a pollutant. It's ridiculous. As an appeal will ensue as day follows night. We think that both of these rulings are wrong on the law and fail to take account of all the facts. This ruling also raises the stakes for PLF's ongoing litigation against the new definition of waters of the U.S., because they updated it. That's part of the problem here. If farmers need a federal permit to farm in waters of the U.S., despite Congress legislating to the contrary, then it makes an even greater difference how far this oppressive statute extends. And then they have a link where you can go for more information. Hey, don't have a garden because you have a persistent puddle in your yard. That's how far it goes. Okay? We're just looking for trouble hither and yon, and we're getting it because we have allowed the federal government to have far more power through these regulatory agencies than they were ever meant to hold. Then we're going to move on to biometrics. There's an article that somebody sent me from June 21st in the New York Times. And it's goodbye password, banks opt to scan fingers and faces instead, not just faces, eyeballs. The banking password may be about to expire forever. Some of the nation's largest banks, acknowledging that traditional passwords are either too cumbersome or no longer secure, are increasingly using fingerprints, facial scans, and other types of biometrics to safeguard accounts. And they go on to talk about how Wells Fargo lets some customers scan their eyes with their mobile phones. And you know that we've had, that Apple made it so that you can use a fingerprint to unlock your phone, which, quite frankly, in my opinion, is stupid, and here's why. It is no more secure than a password. In fact, it's less secure than a password. Say you're stopped by the police, who now think they have the power and the authority to go into your phone just because they made a traffic stop with you. They can grab your phone, and if you don't have it password protected, they can go into it. Everything on your phone that's none of their business. Everything. But if it's password protected, you are not required to give them the password. However, your password's your fingerprint. There is not a darn thing to prevent that officer from taking your hand, putting your finger on that phone, and getting into your phone. Okay, biometrics. Not more secure than a password that only you know. You think it's going to make it more secure? And fingerprints can be lifted from anything. Oh, but we'll do eye scans with your mobile phone. Oh, great. So somebody wants to get into your account very badly. They just chop off your head or dig out your eye. Wow, that's more secure. hey, instead of just torturing me to get my password or tricking me into giving it to you, you can take my eye out. Show of hands, who wants to lose their head or their eye or their hand to get their fingerprint or be responsible for fingerprints that you leave everywhere that can be lifted and used to create a false fingerprint on a latex glove to get into your accounts? How is this more secure? It's not. We believe the password is dying. Oh, yeah, because some of the face recognition stuff, too, that would require them to chop off your head. We recognize the contours of your face. The password is dying. We realized we have to get away from personal identification information because of the growing number of data breaches. Long regarded as the stuff of science fiction, biometrics have been tested by big banks for decades, but have only recently become sufficiently accurate and cost-effective to use in a big way. With many of the early prototypes, a facial scan could be foiled by bad lighting, and voice recognition could be scuttled by background noise or laryngitis. And, before the smartphones became ubiquitous, there was an even bigger obstacle. To capture a finger image or scan an eyeball, a bank would have to pay to distribute the necessary technology to tens of millions of customers. But now you've all provided yourselves with the technology. How convenient. It is not more secure. Here's another objection. Not all of us have smartphones because some of us don't like them. We don't want to be connected 24/7. We think there are places where there should be no phones, where we should be forced to rely on ourselves and our wits, and where we know that nobody's going to call us for as long as we're there. Yes, the world could fall apart, but we will be enjoying our solitude. And here's another thing, probably the more interesting and alarming thing. How many people think that if the banks have fingerprint databases, which they'd have to have, facial recognition scan databases, which they'd have to have, eyeball scan databases, which they'd have to have, how many of you think that the government won't have those things also? How many of you think that your personal private identifying information won't be accumulated in a huge database by the email snooping government? How much power will that give them? Oh, you know what? We couldn't find this fingerprint from a crime scene in our regular database of criminals, which we're only allowed to keep of criminals. Let's go ask the banks if we can use their databases. Oh, but that'll keep us safe. That'll be better. That's only if the government is not tyrannical and trying to frame you for something. That's only if the government isn't tyrannical and trying to get you to shut up for some reason. That's only when you can trust the government. And as we have seen from their persistent spying on our private communications, the government is not to be trusted. So that's where we're headed, folks. It's a bold new world. Gonna be interesting. Going to be interesting indeed. So let me close out these ones because I already talked about them and move on to religion. And I have there a link to a video by Rebel Media, which is a Canadian outfit, but they cover a lot of American stuff too, and they tend to not be politically correct. So I watch a lot of their videos. And they are talking about the FBI releases a partial transcript of the 911 call from Orlando, but Obama edits Islam out of the Orlando terrorist attack. Loretta Lynch says, no, we're not going to give them more power by publicizing this group, this horrible group. Like Americans aren't aware, very well aware, of who this man claimed to be or what he claimed to be working for. Here's a partial transcript here. Emergency 911, this is being recorded. In the name of God the Merciful, the Beneficial, and then something in Arabic. What? What he said in Arabic, I think, was... Yeah, I'm not going to go there. What? Praise be to God, and prayers as well as peace be upon the Prophet of God, then in Arabic something. I let you know I'm in Orlando, and I did the shootings. What's your name? My name is I Pledge Allegiance To, omitted. What he pledged allegiance to was ISIS. Excuse me. Okay, what's your name? I pledge allegiance to, omitted. May God protect him, in Arabic, on behalf of, omitted. All right, where are you at? Where are you at? In Orlando. Where in Orlando? End of call. So apparently, we are such delicate, precious snowflakes that if we hear about ISIS, we're going to be converted into jihadis. That's the fear. That's the fear that moderate Muslims in America will hear this and be emboldened to become jihadis. Emboldened. That they're so unstable, these Muslims in America, that if they hear of one of their fellows going off on jihad in America, it's going to inspire more of them to do so. Of course it will. Of course it will. And you can't stop it by omitting those things. It's absolutely ridiculous to think you can. You can't hide your head in the sand. This is what ISIS is. This is what Islam is. ISIS is doing what Islam tells them to. You cannot censor it. Oh, wait, yes, you can. This administration, since 2008, has been censoring the training of our security infrastructure. Department employees, the people who deal with information, processing information, to protect this nation, they took all the training out. All the training about Islam and jihad, that's gone from their curriculum. Now, quite frankly, I think they'd have to be brain dead by this point in time to not know exactly what Islam is and what it does and what it preaches. But it's not in the official training, so they can't recognize it. And this person sitting in the office, occupying the Oval Office, won't even use the term except to make fun of those who say, why won't you use the term? He doesn't use the term, in my opinion, because he's in cahoots with them. He is using, as I have said before in this program, he is using the followers of Islam to create crisis and to rid himself of those who are to rid not just himself but the leftist communist movement of those who are inconvenient to it. Pay attention, folks. Increments. You're not looking at armed forces invading your homes yet. You're looking at incremental removal of our freedoms, our liberties, incremental tyranny. It's how it's done and how it works. And we've seen it time and time again. And every single time the communist philosophies have attempted to be implemented by governments. And it ends up with a lot of people being killed by their own governments. Hiding our heads in the sand does nothing. It's condescending and stupid and dangerous. And, oh, wait. But they can use it to implement gun control. Get Americans disarmed so we can really squeeze down on them. Right? So let's move on into doing what's right. And this is an open letter to Congress on the Irate Tireless Minority blog. An open letter to the Congress of the United States of America. How stands the Republic? That is a question often asked in the first years of this nation. It is an important question and deserves to be asked regularly by those who have been elected by the citizens of this nation. It is your job to maintain the republic. It is not your job to create school curriculum. In fact, you're federally prohibited from doing so, legally prohibited, or to destroy the character of the states through greed for federal monies. Oh, we're not allowed to do this, but if you do it, states, we'll give you money for your highways if you do the speed limit we want. We'll give you money for your schools if you do the curriculum stuff we want. That destroys the character of the states. It is also not your job to regulate what toilets and light bulbs we may use. It is your job to maintain the republic. The purpose of the republic is to secure the unalienable rights with which we are endowed by our Creator. Want proof? Here's the founding documents, which is part of the law of this nation. The first founding document of this nation, the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Hear that? To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. The U.S. Constitution, on the other hand, is a list of limitations placed upon the federal government by the founders of this nation. You are to be limited in order that liberty may be maintained throughout generations. You are to maintain the republic in such a way that the generation that comes after ours has the same liberty to legally exercise their creator-endowed, self-evident, unalienable, and constitutionally affirmed rights as does this one. Or perhaps considering how many rules and regulations have been put in place by unelected bureaucrats to stifle our exercise of those same liberties of late, more than did this generation. The people, according to that same Declaration of Independence, have a right and a duty to choose to replace this government with one that will secure those rights if you will not resist the whims of current culture in this regard. To wit, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves, by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. There are ever-growing attacks against the rights enumerated in the U.S. Constitution, attacks against the right to worship as our conscience directs, the right to speak freely, and once again, after a tragic shooting, calls to limit the right to bear arms. Our natural rights, as do all natural rights, have natural limits. The right to worship freely ends where religion demands that our government be replaced by Sharia or any form of government other than the one our founders established. And no, I do not have to bake you a cake if, by doing so, I violate my own conscience with regard to my faith or for any other reason. If it violates my conscience to bake it, I don't have to, because you are not allowed to compel me to do something for you. And you don't have to bake me one either. The right to freedom of speech ends where your speech may cause immediate and tangible harm to another, such as yelling fire in a crowded theater. Disagreeing with your opinion or pointing out an unpalatable truth are allowed. Even insulting you is allowed, even if by so doing you are triggered. So what if you're triggered? It's words. Deal with it. Now, if by those words you're attempting to change the laws of my nation, that affects me. That affects me. You are not allowed to change the form of this government to suit your Sharia or any other ideology as if it infringes on my rights, which Sharia would. Your right to bear arms ends where it is used to rob, rape, or murder another. Yes, some arms may be used for hunting, target practice, self-defense, or whatever, But the logical impetus behind the Second Amendment is to recognize that the people have a natural remedy, along with the right to employ that remedy, for maintaining the republic in the face of invasion or of tyrannical government. Because that is how important it is to maintain the republic. It's of such importance that each individual citizen has a duty to speak up and take action when the government exceeds its grant of authority. Hillary Clinton said the government has a right to regulate guns. No, it doesn't. Government has no rights. What government has is a grant of authority from the people. At least in this country, that's the way it's supposed to work. The same principles demonstrated every time a citizen does their duty to work with law enforcement officers to maintain the rule of law, that it is an individual thing. And as an individual, I am calling out Congress and saying your duty is to maintain the republic. On the national level, it is your job, Congress, to maintain the republic. The United States is not a democracy where the whims of one generation may vote away the legal exercise of the rights of the next. Those rights are self-evident, as stated by the Declaration of Independence, and unalienable. Unalienable means that those rights cannot be removed from us but by death. We are endowed by our Creator with those rights. That means they are not the grants of any earthly government and cannot be voted or legislated away by government. At least not legally, so long as the Constitution remains the supreme law of the land. And if the federal government should attempt to do so illegally, then the republic has been lost. It's been lost because we have elected people who don't understand unalienable, endowed by their Creator, the fact that we have these rights, whether they're legal to exercise or not. And not just those rights in the Constitution, but the unenumerated ones too, like the self-evident, unalienable right of a parent to direct the upbringing and education of their child. If you fail, Congress, to maintain the republic in this generation, then you will inevitably drive the next to restore it by force. It is understood that there is pressure upon you, and that you may be publicly shamed, ooh, we're dying of embarrassment, by those cowards and weaklings who would prefer a government that will take care of them rather than a government that maintains and respects liberty along with all the responsibilities that imposes upon the individual. But you have asked to be put in that position, a position where strong character is required to maintain the republic, not to fundamentally transform it. That is the duty for which you were elected, not just for today, but for tomorrow. So for today, on your watch, Congress, house the republic. And if I may say so, I didn't address the right to privacy in that blog post, but the right to privacy, the right to be secure in your person and papers and homes. Biometrics invades that. The government collecting and reading all of our emails violates that. It's violated. Wake up, people. Wake up before it's too late. Surely, surely we must have people of good character out there and for Congress. With that, I have had my 60-second warning. We are all an irate, tireless minority of one. We can all make a difference, and we're all supposed to. Used to be taught in civics that these sorts of things were our duty to restrict Congress from meddling in things that are none of their business, our duty to restrict our state governments, our local governments, our duty to recognize when greed is being used to drag us further in one direction or another, further from the maintenance of the republic. That's an individual duty. Find a spot where you can make a difference. Get out there, make it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening in the archives, those who do so. And have a great week.